Welcome once again to another episode of Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. I hope you're all doing well this evening. Tonight on the show, we're going to be taking a closer look at a theater that grows from the ground up. Its work shaped not just by story, but by place, by community, and by the land itself. At Farm Rats Collective, performance doesn't just stay confined to a stage. It moves through the fields. It unfolds in barns and invites audiences into an experience that is as much about participation as it is about observation. It's a theater that asks questions about history, identity, ecology, and certainly the ways we connect with one another and to the world around us. Now, this season, that work continues to evolve with returning productions that have taken on new life, new works being built in the room, and ideas that stretch beyond the farm and into new spaces and new audiences. So tonight we're going to step inside that process. And to help guide us, I'm joined by two of the artists at the center of it all. So settle in as we go behind the scenes for another in-depth conversation with the theater makers who live and work right here in our community. Today, my guests are Tanis Kowalczyk and Jess Beveridge from Farm Arts Collective, based in the Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. And over the past season, they've continued to push the boundaries of what performances can be. From immersive works like their Dream on the Farm, Paradise Lost scavenger hunt, to the return of their powerful and deeply resonant production of Lucy Joseph, to Tanis's personal solo piece Decompositions, which has now traveled well beyond the farm, both nationally and internationally. And looking ahead, we're going to explore the next chapter of The Dream on the Farm, centered on Jannie Appleseed, as well as a major new devised work, The Scattered Seeds of Troy, inspired by the Euripides, the Trojan Woman. So today we're going to dive into that process, into the place, and into what it means to create theater that grows out of the land and reaches far beyond it. Tanis, Jess, I want to welcome you both back.
So happy to be here. Thank you so much for having us, Tom.
Yes, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.
You're
so
welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. So as I said in the intro there, we have a lot to talk about. I do want to review your past season because it was very successful. Mm-hmm. Dream on the Farm, number 6, was Paradise Lost scavenger hunt. Really, really good. It was very immersive. And I think that is the point of it, right? It reimagined the story of Adam and Eve through a contemporary ecological lens and invited audiences to move through the land as part of that experience, of course, based on Paradise Lost. So for someone who arrived there at the first time, what were they stepping into, Tanis?
Sure. The performance started indoors at the new agricultural center on the farm that we built in 2024 and opened in 2024. And so we staged a opera in the form of no theater to tell the story of Paradise Lost by John Milton. So a kind of crazy idea.
No?
But yeah, that's what we did. And it was very structured. It was like, it was all music for the most part with a few little scenes dappled in between. But it was a sung piece. Doug Rogers, our composer, took Milton's text and created a full, maybe it was like 40 minutes of.
Yeah.
Was that what it was, Jess?
At least.
Yeah. And so it was like an operetta using Milton's words with Doug's incredible, strange, delightful music.
Mm.
And a lot of the work was very much movement-based, which is my background. I enjoy working very physically into developing theater work and that there's always some form of action and specificity in the body of the actors as a chorus or as individuals. And it was a very visual telling of the story.
And it was a wonderful evening of theater because not only did we get to experience that, but right after that, we were led outside, broken up into groups, and there was even a little competition going on there between the two groups. Right, Jess?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, so Adam took one group of our audience, and then Eve took the other group. and they all follow them through the fields of Will-O-Wisp to find things on their scavenger hunt list. And then we came back to the theater and we all shared what we found on the scavenger hunt list. And it was really magical. It was really wonderful.
And it was very comprehensive. I mean, we spent a good, probably a good hour out in the field going from station to station.
And it was interactive, as you recall, Tom. The what we ended up doing with one of the stations of the scavenger hunt was to post on our fence line all the words that had been recently banned or discouraged by the National Endowment for the Arts and the government, and we had lost our NEA grant that year. It was revoked, actually. It was given to us and then revoked because of our climate change-ish themed performance. So we put up all the words that the government was discouraging, and we asked the audience to walk past the words and then to come up as a team to create a sentence from the words. And that was a very memorable moment for a lot of people.
That was a powerful part of that, because I did take the journey with the audience. And I feel like that was the part that people really like sank into.
And it empowered, and it empowered people to to say something about that, literally using the banned words. It was kind of clever.
Yeah, to make up the sentence.
Really great.
Yeah, so it was a very exciting time. It was a lot of fun, and it invites you to really participate, to really become part of the show, if you will. When you're developing these pieces, what is your approach to it? Because there was just so much, Tennis.
Oh, that was one of the biggest projects, I think, that we've done for Dream on the Farm. That's a great question. Jess is an important part of coming up with how to, like, just heard the cats. I mean, there's a lot of people.
Keep everyone focused and keep everyone jazzed for what they're doing and involved. And Tanis is always so great about bringing so many different kinds of people together with many different backgrounds and many different experience levels, but really being able to curate and find a spot for them within the shows where they can shine and where they can bring something of themselves to it. So it really is a beautiful thing to watch and experience, for sure.
Yeah. It's always evolving. Yeah. And with humans being the ones telling the story, humans are always evolving and changing and discovering. So it's such an alive art form. Theater is a conversation. It's like we don't know anything about a show until the first night. So that's why
That's
why we need to be flexible as we move forward. And it's just like a living art form like nothing else.
And that will give us a segue into the next part, because now this season, 2026, we're focusing on Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah.
Now, what brought you to that story, and how are you going to bring John Chapman into the farm arts community into this next piece?
It's a great question. So what brought us to Johnny Chapman, Johnny Appleseed, who was a real person born in the 1770s in Massachusetts, was that the United States is celebrating its 250th anniversary, and there was some funding available. And so we went for it and said he's a figure, an historical figure from that time, born in 1774. And
yes, 1774.
Yeah. And could we explore what his life was and what it meant, and explore that time period through the lens of seeds and seed planting, and also the expansion of the United States and the relationship that people had to the land, including the white people, the Native American people, the new arrivals, it was a very interesting time. And so we're going to explore, what happened to all the apples he planted in the filter of climate change, right? Which is the intention of Dream on the Farm, is to explore stories about the changing planet and climate change. And so to look at that, and where did he plant his orchards, and why did he plant his orchards? Was it because he was a profiteer who wanted to make money, or was he a missionary with the Swedenborgians? Because apparently he was a big missionary. So like, there's just so much to explore through the lens of environmentalism, humanism, the abuses felt by the Native American people. There's a lot in there. And so we're calling it Johnny Appleseed and Historical Fantasia.
And it's going to start outside on the farm this year, and we're going to make a journey around on the farm, and we're going to basically hear his life story.
Okay. All right. Through again, one's audience interaction, getting up out of your seats, walking around the farm.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yes,
yeah. It's mostly a walking show this year.
Yes.
But I do believe we will have some form of transport, like a covered wagon type thing.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, we're trying to figure that out because it would be perfect for the time period and the journey of that. So.
Oh, yes, that would be wonderful.
Try to make that accessible. Yes. Yes.
I learned about this cool thing in doing research of the time. I was like, what kind of performance
would come
to towns in the late 1700s and early 1800s in Massachusetts? And there was something called mud shows. And mud shows were traveling performances of puppets and minstrels and little circus acts and portraiture, like painting.
Cool.
People would paint other people. And so these mud shows would travel about 20 miles from town to town a day and give shows. So I just love that we're doing a mud show this year on our farm.
And hence some of the possible stations.
Exactly.
That you can have.
And the style of theater telling. Like, how do we tell this? It's a mud show.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting. A series of scenes have been written already by Doug Rogers and Melissa Bell and Mark Dunow.
Yeah.
Who are the composer and writers in our collective. And so I told them, go write, go compose, and bring us a proposal so we can start rehearsing. And that's exactly what happened.
What role are you going to be playing in it, Jess, or are you going to be in the background again this season?
Yeah, so exciting to say that after 2 years of not being in Dream on the Farm, I am going to be acting in it this year.
There we go.
I'm super excited about. I'm really thrilled about it. And it was awesome to be a part of the rehearsal in that way and to be a part of the process and just start singing again and just start doing the acting thing again. It's really exciting to be able to step away from the tech stuff and being involved in the show this year. I'm really excited.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. I want to move on to another big success from last season, Lucy Joseph. Jess, you were on the show twice talking about this. The first time we just kind of introduced the audience to what was happening. You had three performances of that, sold out Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. People who wanted to see it were unable to see it because there's just so many seats. So you were able to bring it back. What was the difference between the two, the June performance and the November performance? I know going into it, you had some idea of what might happen, you and Mimi, the director, Mimi McGirl, of some of the things that were changing. But for you, Jess, did the relationship with Lucy evolve for you at all?
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's a great question, Tom, for sure. I feel that when we put it up in June, I feel that we did a fantastic job and we all worked really hard on that and the staging was beautiful and we had wonderful responses from the crowd. But personally, and I don't want to speak for the rest of the cast, but personally, I did feel like we weren't quite lived in it yet. We quite didn't know who these people were yet because there's so much that has to go into putting on a show and inviting 70 people to come into the house and feeding them all and all the other things that have to happen.
Sure.
And I just feel like it wasn't as lived in as I think it could have been. But I think that's also like nerves play into that. And it's the first time we're doing this and I'm leading this show. And it was a lot of pressure. But when we closed on that Sunday, we were all like, oh, we want to do this again and again and again. And then we came up with the idea of like, why don't we put it up in the fall? Because there was a lot of people that weren't able to see it because of the time of the year. And then when we started rehearsing again for it for our November run, it was like, oh, the family's back together. And we just felt, we knew the play, right? We knew it.
Yeah.
We knew where we had to go. We knew what scene came next. We knew our lines. We knew what we needed to portray in each scene. So it just felt more lived in and I felt more comfortable with that person and with all the relationships on stage. So it just felt, it felt cleaner. I felt more proud of it in November for sure. And proud of the fact that we were able to do it twice in 1 year.
So it sounds like what you're saying to me, a lot of the mechanics of playmaking were already done for that second run.
Exactly.
Right. And I remember you discussing during our second conversation, Jess, that your relationship, the woman who played your wife.
Sam Melman. Samantha
Melman. Yes. And she had asked you for a little bit more, if I remember. Did you find the space to create that, to engage more with that relationship with her?
Yes, I did. I did. And there was suggestions from Tanis and from the director, Mimi, to really lean into that relationship. And working with Sam was so comfortable. It was just seamless to work with her and to be able to really lean into, let's kiss, actually. Let's really lean into this. Let's mm-hmm. be more flirty. And even off stage, we're able to form a really wonderful bond and a relationship. And I think that inevitably helps people on stage as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I really enjoyed that relationship in particular.
Thank you for saying so.
Yes, absolutely. It was a very warm, loving relationship, and you really felt that on stage. Yeah, absolutely. Well, for audience members who would like to come a fourth, fifth, and sixth time or more, or who haven't seen the show yet, my understanding is that Lucy Joseph will be put up yet again this season. Tell us when, where, and how.
Yeah, so excited to be bringing Lucy Joseph to the Cooperage Project.
Yay!
On Sunday, June 7th at 2 o'clock. We are so grateful to be bringing it there during Pride Month, which is going to be great, and also bringing it to Honesdale, where so much of this story takes place. So yeah. It's awesome to be able to reference the town and like actually be playing in that town. I think that's going to be super special.
I look forward to come see it again. Different space, a little bit smaller.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And we always make it work. That's the thing about us in Farm Arts Collective. Like, we're so jazzed for a challenge like that. We're mm-hmm. like, okay, they're giving us this space or this configuration. And it's like, yeah, we're going to make this work and it's going to be rad. And that's the exciting thing about what Tanis is saying about like leaning into the change of things, that we're so flexible and we've just trained that way that we know there's going to be challenges and we know that something's probably going to come up, but we're really resilient and we're able to work with that. So I'm excited to put it up there for sure.
All right, we're going to take a little break here at this point. We've been talking with Tanis Squalchuk and Jess Beveridge of the Farm Arts Collective. We've been talking a lot about the success of their past season. When we come back, we're going to dive a little bit more into what is going to happen this season because there is a lot on their plate. We'll be right back.
Hey, there's a bunch of really great stuff here to suck on.
What?
On the next Radio Lab, we're going up.
These trees are huge.
Into the treetops.
It was like being a detective.
To chase a mystery.
There's something going on up here.
But what's about to happen?
Oh my gosh!
And stumble into a secret garden.
This is amazing.
I know.
Whoa.
In the sky. That's on the next Radio Lab. Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected. Pennsylvania's primary election is May 19th. The last day to register or change your party status to vote in the Pennsylvania primary is May 4th. Voters can apply for a mail-in ballot for any reason. The last day to apply for an absentee or mail-in ballot for the primary election is May 12th. More info is at vote.pa.gov. This is Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected.
Okay, and we're back talking with Tanis Squalchuk and Jess Beveridge of the Farm Arts Collective over there in Damascus, Pennsylvania on the Willow Wisp Farm. So, speaking of farming, decompositions, Tanis, we talked again a lot about that last year. And we know about the show. It's a duet with a pile of compost, exploring the cycles of life, basically. But you had the opportunity to go internationally this year. You went over to Serbia. You performed it there. And I think even more importantly, you got to perform it in your hometown. Mm. You went back to your country of birth, Canada, mm-hmm. and you performed it there. So tell us a little bit about what it was like. Well, let's start with Serbia. How did that performance go? Was there translation involved? That kind of stuff, as far as language translation.
So this was part of an international theater festival that mm-hmm. was attached to a very famous Eastern European jazz festival called Nishvil Jazz Festival. And mm-hmm. this one was Jazz Theater Festival. I performed in English and I performed outdoors in a beautiful piazza of a fortress.
Nice.
And it was gorgeous. The good fun thing about it was that I got to work with Serbian musician. So I just had the time of my life. It was utter chaos. It was 100 degrees every day and above. I performed at 10 o'clock at night because that's when they couldn't like do anything in the afternoon because it was so freaking hot.
Wow.
And it was wild. My musicians got in car accidents. They didn't show up. I didn't get to tech. We just kind of winged it. I mean, talk about being resilient.
Yeah.
This one gig taught me everything. I was like, I could never get into the rehearsal studio. I'd have to like finagle and find the right person to, like, it was crazy and chaos. And I was hauling my suitcase around and it was like wild. And I just loved every second of it. And I, and they loved my show.
Did they?
Young people were coming up to me and said, "You astounded me." My fellow journalist colleagues were like, "We can't give you the prize for top show, but we actually thought you had the top show with the other Serbian group."
Nice.
And that was amazing. I didn't need that top show thing. Like, I don't care about that, really. I was actually really surprised that they loved my show, because I wasn't sure how it would translate, honestly. But it is a play about life and living and getting sick and facing your own mortality. So I guess that does translate. It was amazing.
Then you got to perform it and you went to Canada, your hometown of, you mentioned the town.
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg, thank you. So aside from great to see all the family, great to see all the friends, great to reconnect with people that you haven't seen in a while, how was it received in your hometown?
It was received really well. My two theater teachers from high school came. Like, I was like, what?
Yes, it's so beautiful.
That's great.
And they were so.
I would have lost it.
They were so proud of me that I was still doing theater, and that what they taught me, I'm still using. And my theater teacher was like, "Do you remember when we went down to that church and we did that weird rehearsal?" And I was like, yeah. It wasn't actually, but I had to say yes, I did remember. It was beautiful. My friends, my high school friends, it had been a really long time since I'd seen Winnipeg, and I love Winnipeg very much, and I love my friends there. And so it was pretty beautiful reunion.
That's super exciting. So what do you hope when you, through all audiences, what do you hope that they take away from this show?
Decompositions is embrace life, because you don't know what's around the corner. That's it, really. Okay. You don't know when your time is up, and don't hesitate. And also the other message is sometimes it does turn to rot, and that will also change into something that you can use, which is, you know, what happens in the compost pile.
Yeah.
So even the worst of situations can give you something. So let it, just trust it and let it happen.
Yeah. And even in that pile of death, life begins.
Because it just is a cycle.
Yeah.
So that's really what I want people to see, to try to find that metaphor for themselves.
Yeah, wonderful. Let's talk now about, I'm going to call it your flagship production for this year, The Scattered Seeds of Troy. We're looking at a piece that you're putting together. Again, a devised piece. Where did this idea come from? How did it germinate?
Ooh, good one, Tom. Go ahead, Tannis.
Okay, I'll say where it came from, and Jess can talk more about what we've been doing. So when I was in Serbia, just in this past August, my colleague and the director of the festival, a woman that I've known for a long time, Maya Mitic, she was working on a production of the Trojan Women, but a devised version of the Trojan Women. And she was working with Bosnian actors who were working with Serbian actors. And if you know the history of the war there, it ain't pretty between those two countries.
Right.
And she was like, "You should read it. You should read the Jean-Paul Sartre translation." And I read it and I was like, yeah, it is really interesting, an interesting version. And then I started reading more and more versions that I was like, I think this might be something I would like to work on, but put more of an ecological spin on it and also a more hopeful spin. Because if you look at the Trojan Women by Euripides, produced in 400 BC, it was the first anti-war play ever written because it was like looking at war not from the hero's point of view and not from the god's point of view, but from women's point of view who were left as the spoils of war, left with nothing. The play is a massive lamentation, very innovative in its time because it was showing the negative side rather than the glorified side. So I love that about this play. And I love that Euripides was a bit of an outlier amongst the dramatists, the Greek dramatists of his day.
Sure.
He was writing more of the people, for the people, and not for the gods and the heroes and the war heroes. But then I was like, okay, I think in our time, this time we are living in the United States, when we're looking at what's going on all around us, and God, I mean, there was not even a war started when we started The Scattered Seeds of Troy, but in the middle of our rehearsals, literally in the middle of our rehearsals, a war started. by the United States in Iran. And so I'm like, we need to talk about this time through this play. And I was like, I think we need to offer and think about how do you find hope in a hopeless situation and go beyond the play structure and imagine, like, what would give someone hope? Well, for me, I asked myself that. Planting seeds actually gives me hope. Mm-hmm. When I have that power to choose my flowers or my vegetables or my food, and I can plant them, I have a sense of agency about my future, about my life, about my history. I have this sense of connection to the past and to the future and to the present. And so that's the concept of the play. We're asking, what do these four famous Trojan women from the play Euripides, taking those same characters and asking, if they had the opportunity to bring seeds with them, what would they be? And what would that process be for them to come to that revelation and realization within the structure of them being ripped from their land and taken as slaves to a new country?
Right.
So
I was thinking, too, when I first read the title, The Scattered Seeds of Troy, having actually just become familiar with the play, I think of the women themselves as seeds for the next generation and how they were scattered because they were taken slaves. Jess, you're playing Helen. Tanis, you're Hecuba. We have Costanza. I'm going to pronounce her last name wrong.
Bugiani.
Bugiani. Nice Italian name. You think I'd be able to pronounce it. As Cassandra. Ginny Hack as
Andromache.
How much of a historical fact are you taking and putting into the piece?
Well, we're taking a lot of the early part of the play. Like we meet them on the beach after Troy's been sacked. They're waiting to be taken as slaves to other Greek islands by their oppressors, by their enemy, the Greeks. It's really following the structure of the Euripides, where we meet each woman and they kind of tell us their story.
And Jess, as far as like the actual script then is concerned, how are you devising that? And who is your scribe writing down great lines or whatever it might be?
Yeah. So we're mixing the traditional language that is in the original plays and the different translations that we have all been reading. But we're also combining that with modern language. Tanis has been giving all of the actors different prompts to bring into rehearsals, and we're all working together to seeing what works with that. And then Tanis has really been the one to take all of these ideas and put it into the script and put it into the structure and say, okay, this belongs here, this belongs here. And then we work on it, and then it changes, and then we rewrite it. But Tanis has really been the one to create the structure and to capture those different moments and those different lines and put it all together.
Okay.
And it's a lot of like asking the actors to come up with proposals. Mm-hmm. We've been recording dreams. We've been using our dreams
a lot
to develop material. It's like a big weaving process, weaving so many different strands together to create the text / physical movement structure.
That's what makes it so real and so connected to what the actors are doing, because we're coming up with that material. We're taking it from our memories, our soul, our heart, right? We're taking all of that and we're putting it on the page and we're expressing it. It's so connected. And the way that we've been working, the four of us together, has been really beautiful and so honest and so real and so intense and focused. And it's just been a really beautiful experience to really like open our hearts up to each other and find that beautiful relationship that we're all trusting each other and vulnerable with each other and safe. And I'm so excited to continue to work on it and build this show.
Now, you're serving as both the director, Tanis, and you're also, as I mentioned earlier, playing Hecuba in the play. How do you navigate those two roles, given the big responsibility of what Jess was just telling us of you kind of putting the structure together?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been doing this for a long time, building, writing, acting, and directing. Sometimes I ask someone to step in as my body.
Okay.
Just to get a sense of staging. But I have such a vision, I have such a clear idea for this show that I can almost see it and do it at the same time. I can't explain it. and then looking at the video for the more choreographic mm-hmm. elements. Or I ask other people who are watching.
Mm-hmm. Right.
People have, everyone around me is super smart.
Mm-hmm.
And they have great eyes. So it's going to be really cool.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. So before, when we were talking about the Dream on the Farm, and you mentioned how you encourage your performers, your co-creators, to be willing to evolve in the piece. In this piece, Scattered Seeds of Troy, when the four of you or whatever group is involved in the devised process, how do you recognize, not having, you have the film and everything, but there's not an audience, there's not a way for you to say, I don't think this is where, how do you recognize it?
It's instinct. It's taste. Mm-hmm. I have a certain mm-hmm. taste. And you know what? I might be wrong, too. Mm-hmm. But I just have to go with my instincts and tastes. And then I think I'd listen to what Jess and Ginny and Costanza say. I listen to mm-hmm. No one's like secretly thinking something and not coming out and crying at night. Like everyone knows they can say something to me, honestly.
Absolutely. 100%.
And it's open. It's an open channel. Everyone knows someone has to make a final decision. And we actually did just have a little presentation of it at International Women's Day on March 8th.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right. That's
and
right.
We did like music stand play reading.
Stage reading, babe.
Yeah. Stage reading. Okay.
It was like maybe 15 minutes of the show. And
And
the response was shockingly great, and people really liked the writing.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So I'm feeling we're on the right path. I can't tell you, mm-hmm. but we're on the right path. It still needs so much work. Mm-hmm. We need months mm-hmm. and months and months
of course.
Work on it. And then after we start performing it, we need a couple years to make it what it ultimately will be.
So when can we expect to see the first iteration of the Scattered Seeds of Troy?
The first full production that we're feeling like, yes, this is the first draft that we're ready to show and be really proud of, is going to be November.
Yeah, the 12th through the 15th here at Farm Arts Collective. It's a Thursday through Sunday run. Yeah.
There's going to be one other little window into the process, which will be at the Deepwater Literary Festival on June 20th, Saturday, June 20th. Yeah, a little window, yes, not the full production, but a window.
A taste.
Yeah,
a taste.
Get a quick taste. So that's coming up, folks. One of the shows that are coming up in their vast array of productions that are happening in the coming year at Farm Arts. There's always something going on. Yeah. We'll talk now about the beginning of a series called My Bookish Friends, a literary series. Keyword there is series. Right. So tell us how this developed and what brought this idea on.
Well, there's like a lot of people in our orbit who are writing books. And I just thought, wouldn't it be nice to highlight people who are working on books and give them a little bit of the spotlight? It's such a different kind of art form to sit at a desk and write books. And I really admire all my friends who do that, mm-hmm. who don't get the kind of immediate feedback that Jess mm-hmm. and I and the collective get for their output. Mm-hmm. So it's such a, wow, I just couldn't do it just to be a writer. So I really admire that dedication and discipline. And so we thought, why not do a literary series and highlight all the friends of ours in the collective and in the community who write books?
So, that's fantastic. Yeah. What a great idea. So this is just the beginning. I love that you're celebrating local, not only local artists, local actors, local musicians, but now you're expanded to include local authors, reaching out to and germinating new seeds.
And we're trying to do the evening, like the series, they'll be always on a Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. We're trying to like focus thematically a little bit mm-hmm. on like the style of writing or the subject. The series in May, the episode, will be the writer, a local writer, Busy Coy, who is a humorist and writes very much from a personal point of view, along with Darcy Stanky, who has a new book out about the body and different sources of pain and medicine in the body. And Darcy's a well-known writer of memoir and mm-hmm. personal writing. And so we're thrilled that she's going to be reading as well and with her book, with her new book.
Great, great. So you have already the series kind of planned.
Yeah, we still are looking for the third series. We still haven't planned the third episode in the series, but we're getting there.
Great, great. Love it. So there are different ways that people can support Farm Arts. Of course, there's the monetary way that you can go on their website and certainly donate. But they're also looking for volunteers to grow their group and to grow the community at Farm Arts. So what are you looking for? What is it about? What are you looking to bring into your community?
Go for it, Jess.
Yeah. So I'm just going to say this. We cannot do what we do here at Farm Arts Collective without our volunteers. And that is legit and so true. We need so much help for each event, whether it be a small little workshop or our huge endeavor of Dream on the Farm. We're always trying to find people to help us out with all aspects of it, whether it be helping to park cars or being in the box office or on the merch table or greeting, ushering, helping with hospitality, with the fresh food that we serve at every event and workshop that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really wanting people that have volunteered in the past to bring people that they know. New people are always welcome. And just to come in and to learn about our jam-packed season this year and all the opportunities that we have for them to volunteer. And we're encouraging people to bring their schedules in and to really try to sign up for as many of the slots that they can.
So there's lots of opportunities. I mean, it could be anything from being an usher at one of the shows or someone who's working in the box office.
Yep.
And so you need people to do that, people to escort you around the farm on some of those days when you have farm tours. And there's so many things happening there. We can go on and on in different ways that the public can support Farm Arts other than coming out to see the shows. To volunteer.
Yeah, and then when you volunteer, you'll participate in that event, whether it's a show or a workshop on soil health or flower picking or whatever. Like when you volunteer, you also get to participate in that day's event.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Is you also
that's a volunteer perk that they get to see the show for free. They get to come to the workshop for free, and we encourage that. We want them to stick around and to be a part of what we do.
Yeah,
for sure.
And you do have other workshops coming up about seed germination and about farming itself. And I think your husband,
composting,
composting, and Tanis's husband gives a tour at some point on the farm as well. So there's so many events coming up. This is all part of their season, folks, and this is all coming up. And everything can be found on Farm Arts Collective website. You can find out when, where, and how.
Great.
So finally, I want to talk about a little bit more of the future of Farm Arts Collective Tanis, because we've talked a couple of times off air about the possibility of bringing a show to New York City, about expanding your audience or bringing Farm Arts to New York City audiences, or maybe even bringing New York City audience somehow somewhere to Farm Arts. Tell us a little bit more about what your aspirations are for that and how we might achieve that, because I'm a big fan of that. I really would love to share Farm Arts with the New York City theater community.
So this is a really good question. I've been thinking about who do we want to have a conversation with about with our art, with our proposal for a work of art, a point of view of the world, which a play is. It's a point of view of the world, and it's a specific way of telling it, and it's a beautiful, artful piece, hopefully. And I was like, well, I love my audiences here. I've developed this relationship with audiences here in the Catskills, in Northeast Pennsylvania, in North America in some ways. Yeah. We've been traveling around a lot with our performances, right? And it's been a long time since I've performed in New York. I've gone to see shows in New York, but what was the last time? Jess, can you even think? What's the last time we performed in New York?
It was at the International Human Rights Art Festival two Decembers ago.
Okay, but also like not a run. I don't even know if Farm Arts Collective has done a run.
Yeah. No, we've never done a run in New York. No.
Prior to that, with NACL, I performed at Here Art Center. We were in the early days performing at La Mama. So I've been thinking a lot about it because I think with Scattered Seeds of Troy and even with Decompositions, those are plays that I think could—
And Lucy Joseph.
And Lucy Joseph. Yeah. That's a bigger play. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a bigger play that is that. But these other pieces, like they're tourable. Like they're tourable and manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking in terms of how would we want to bring it to New York? And I'm just starting to think about that for the first time since creating Farm Arts Collective. I've been working so hard at developing this company and this space and opening the new space. And so I don't know, I'm still thinking about it. It would have to be something that was affordable for us where we weren't spending $15,000 a week on rent, which is what it is right now. So it would have to be in a situation where someone was interested in co-producing with us.
Right.
And I have some ideas, but yeah. So,
yeah, we talked about the tank again off air and, you know, it's a space that would certainly, I think would fit Lucy Joseph certainly, but you're right. That's a bigger cast, but would definitely fit Decompositions. I mean, you could do that just about anywhere.
Yeah.
And with a 4-person play in Scattered Seeds of Troy, I would imagine that would fit in there.
So yeah, those are like the smaller shows for going into the city or is obviously more affordable because every person costs money to house them, to feed them, to pay them, right? So that's why I'm like thinking about a smaller cast for something
that
like
that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But yeah, I'm thinking about it for the first time in probably 10 years tour.
So a new seed has been planted.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see how it gets watered and how much sun it needs. But at this point in time, that is a thought. That's an idea. Mm-hmm. Because growth is important, right? Because you've done so much here in this community. Yeah. Your name, Tanis, is, I tell you, just about every guest that I've had recently, your name comes up in one way or another. I mean, we had Barry Plaxton on the show. Tanis came up. We had Bess Collins on the show recently. Your name come up in Farm Arts. We certainly had Karen Malpied. We talked a lot about Farm Arts in that because of the Blue Valiant.
Blue Valiant.
Yes. So,
right.
So we talked a lot about about Farm Arts and about you, Tanis. So you've really grown in this community and sort of almost like bursting at the seams a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time, and I'm glad you have that idea in your head. I would love to see it. If I had money, I'd be producing it for you.
Okay.
You
well, let's look.
We know that.
And I think you are absolutely right. And you actually did put it in my head, actually, Tom, about bringing it to the work of Farm Arts to the city. And I think it's a great idea. And people often say that when they see a good work, people said it about Lucy Joseph. When they see a work that they really appreciate, they always end up saying, "You should bring that to New York."
Of course.
Yeah, and you're like, "Yeah, thanks, sure. I know. Yeah,
I know I should."
Yeah, but we should.
We just, our budget is what our budget is, and it does have to be, in a way, co-produced. We have to find that someone who would be wanting to help us.
Yeah.
With either space, with either resources or actual cash money, baby. You know?
Yeah. Well, we know there's some connections there to the tank. Hopefully some of those pan out. I know somebody who knows somebody, that kind of thing. It's, as I said, a seed, and it might take months or years to actually come to fruition, but it's there, and I'm sure it's just because I want to just share it. It's such a great thing here in our community, Farm Arts, and a lot of the theater.
Of course.
We talk about Brad Krumholtz and NACL and
so
River Rep. And
in this area.
Yeah. But Farm Arts is what you've done, what you've been able to create, Tanis, is quite incredible, and people credit you for that. So, yeah, it would be nice to share. And I get everybody says that, and then they say, "Yeah, you should put on the show. I'll see you later."
Yeah.
Put it in New York, see ya. And don't have any commitment to helping you do that.
Yeah.
In any way I can, I will, as I make more connections and know more people.
We just want to, if you perform, you want to have people there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can trust that will happen. When I say people there, I mean in the audience. And I can trust that will happen here. So you just have to figure out how to get people in the seats in New York City.
That's it. That's it. All right, ladies, is there anything that I haven't discussed that I might have missed that you would like to talk about before we close out today's episode?
Just one more thing that I want to mention, that we're inaugurating one more event. Tom, don't laugh at us. It's a fundraiser, a gala dinner with a very amazing chef from New York City. His name is Mark Ordaz. And he works out of a family meal at the Blue Hill Restaurant in New York City. And so we're doing a chef to farm experience as our fundraiser this year, where a chef is coming to work with all of our amazing produce in October, when it's just like the most stuff we have.
Right.
And so he's creating this really beautiful gourmet sit-down meal for our gala fundraiser.
Great. And do you have a date for that?
Sunday, October 11th at 6 o'clock.
There you go. Jess is always good with that.
She has that darn press release right in front of her.
That's great. Well, I hadn't heard of that yet, so I'm glad that you mentioned it. Another way that people can help Farm Arts, whether it be contributing financially, just coming to see the shows, every performance needs an audience, or volunteering to be part of it, whether it be as an usher or working on the touring on the farm, whatever it might be, there's plenty of opportunity. Where do people go? I'll ask Jess. Jess, where do people go to get all this information?
Sure. So our website is farmartscollective.org. We also have a really great social media presence on Instagram and Facebook. And you can always reach out to Tanis or I at tanis@farmartscollective.org or jess@farmartscollective.org. And I just want to mention that if anyone ever feels that they can't get to an event or a show or can't pay for it or can't afford it, please do reach out to us and we'll make a way for you to be here and we'll make a way for you to be a part of what we do here, because we want everyone to be involved in whatever capacity.
And of course, I always mention that all of their performances are always pay what you can, and you do that.
Absolutely.
You pay what you can. All right, ladies, thank you very much, Tom.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Tanis, Jess, again, thank you both so much. Always a pleasure to sit down with them. And I really appreciate their openness and their thoughtfulness and the work that they continue to bring to our community. I have no doubt that this upcoming season is going to be yet another exciting chapter for Farm Arts Collective. And there are a couple of great events coming up this May at Farm Arts Collective. On Friday, May 8th at 7, you can catch an evening of live music with Richard Holler. Now, Richard was a past guest here on Curtain Call. He's an accomplished theater artist, a songwriter whose work has spanned, well, both New York City and the Catskills, and promises to be a really engaging night of music, food, and community. So that's on May 8th at 7 at Farm Arts. And then on Saturday, May 9th, the next day at 10 a.m., Farm Arts Collective is hosting a hands-on backyard composting workshop with environmental educator Chelsea Kelly. So whether you're brand new to composting or looking to deepen your knowledge about it, about your garden, this is a great opportunity to learn practical skills and explore sustainable practices in a welcoming, interactive setting. And for those of you interested in learning more about Farm Arts Collective, including their full upcoming season, performing schedules, workshops, and how to purchase tickets, you can visit them online at farmartscollective.org. Now, speaking of community and the power of live performance, it's time now for yet another episode of The Roving Thespian. And that effect is called reverb. Not sure if it works or not. Write me. Let me know. This show's still new. I'm experimenting a little bit. Anyway, I went a roving to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, also known as DVAA, for a very special event at the Krause Recital Hall in Narrowsburg, where a table reading of Our Town, it's a Thornton Wilder piece, brought together performers and audience members for a afternoon that was both intimate and deeply nostalgic. The production will be returning to the Tustin Theater this fall, with auditions actually coming up in May. It's going to be marking a remarkable 50-year anniversary since it last graced the Tustin stage. Now, while I was there, I had the chance to speak with some of the participants in the reading and members of the audience as well, all of whom shared an overwhelmingly sense of excitement and anticipation for return of this classic American work. So, let's have a listen. And here we are today, the Roving Thespian, that's me, over at the DVAA in the town of Narrowsburg. Really exciting time. They're going to be producing a show this fall called Our Town. And today we're doing a table reading of the play. It'll be directed by a guest on the show, Greg Triggs, who you might have heard last time on the Roving Reporter segment. And this week we're doing what's called a table reading of the play. And the table is currently filled with well-known actors in the community that we have had on the show before, such as our good friend Arthur Alisi and Jess Beveridge, Catherine Montisi. She's been on the show before. So it's an exciting time today. We're getting ready to do this reading, and we'll see how it goes. Okay, we're at the DVAA in Narrowsburg today. I'm speaking with Greg Triggs. What is a table reading?
Table reading is basically a cold reading where the script is explored. We're doing this for our town because, number one, I want to hear this play as many times as I can. And number two, we're hoping to drum up enthusiasm for auditions, which are going to be May 20th and 23rd for a full production of Our Town at the Tustin Theater in honor of DVAA's 50th anniversary, and that will be at the end of October.
So you're going to be casting locally for most of the cast, correct?
We're going to cast a wide net, but yes, it is our intention to use area actors.
And right now I see a table full of area of actors, of people from River Rep, people from DVAA productions in the past, Farm Arts. Everybody seems to be here. Looks like you already have a cast.
Well, you know, it's kind of a microcosm to the play, right? We are casting Our Town with actors from Our Town.
That's perfect. So the actual audition is going to be the end of May, and they're going to be held at DVAA here in Tustin?
They'll be held in Tustin. I don't know if it's going to be at the Tustin Theater or here at DVAA, Krause Hall, but you'll be able to find out all about it on the website, Delaware Valley Arts Alliance.
Okay, well, Greg, it's great to talk to you again, and we'll talk to some of the potential cast as well.
Awesome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Your name again?
Sheila Zayas.
So, Sheila, we went to the reading today of Our Town. 50th anniversary for the show is coming up at the Tustin Theater. What did you think of the reading today?
I thought it was absolutely excellent. I thought the play was tonight because everyone was so well prepared and well rehearsed and well. It was. I really loved it, and I got teary at the end. I only like shows that get me to cry a little bit. So, it was successful.
Well, the thing is, they didn't rehearse. This is their first reading of the play, and they did a fantastic job.
I was so impressed. I didn't know what to expect, so we were very happy that there was a full audience, and everyone we've spoke to really liked it a lot.
Do you plan on coming to see the play?
I do, now that I know it's in October. I definitely am. 17th, he said, was the first night. I made a mental note of it, so I do plan to be here. My son was also in the high school production, but I can't remember what part he played. So.
Well, I'm going to ask you this now. Do you plan to come into the auditions?
No. That dedicated, I'm not. I'll save everybody the humiliation or whatever.
You never know. They need people for the choir.
Well, that's for sure not, but thanks for asking.
Okay, Sheila, and I thank you, too, for being part of Curtain Call again.
Thank you.
So now we're here with Lexi McEntee, and Lexi, you played Emily in the show. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful production. This is the first time reading it, right? You guys didn't rehearse or anything?
No, we haven't rehearsed. This was the first time we all got together and read it.
The cast seemed very comfortable with each other to begin with. And I know a lot of you do know each other already from other productions. But for the first read...
Yeah, I think it's part of this play lends yourself to want to connect so genuinely and honestly that you can't kind of passively read this play, right? Mm-hmm. To do it justice, it feels like you've just got to really be present and be there.
Yeah, and you know what I noticed, too? A lot of you were feeding a lot off of each other, yeah. Which a lot of times in readings don't happen. People just read it, and they look at their script. You guys were making eye contact. You guys were listening to each other and actually responding to it.
I think also, too, I mean, as an actor, I feel like I need that connection. I think a lot of us feel that way. I think it's kind of necessary to do the job right.
Well, I was very impressed. I just talked to a couple of ladies who absolutely loved it and are looking forward to coming in October. Do you plan on coming to the auditions in May?
I do plan on coming to the auditions in May. This role is like an honor for an actress to be able to play Emily Webb. It's like Juliet and Romeo and Juliet. So it would really be such an honor to get to play her, yeah.
But anyway, it's lovely to see you. I'm finally glad that we actually got to talk. And we got to get you on the show sometime real soon. Sit down and really talk a full 1 hour and get you on the show.
That would be a pleasure. I would love to do that.
And that really was a fun afternoon of theater. And there was a lot of people there. The house was pretty much packed, very engaged audience. And the reading, it clearly struck a chord with them because people were laughing and applauding and very excited to hear the actors who did the reading. And by the way, they were all great. If that's any indication, the return of our town to the Tustin Theater this fall is really shaping up to be something really, really special and a lot of fun. Auditions are expected to take place in the coming weeks. Greg gave the dates. It's the very beginning of May, so soon, a couple of weeks from now. So do be sure, though, to check with the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance for the specific dates. It'll be there up on their website at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. And while you're there, don't forget that DVAA is celebrating a major milestone this year. I mentioned the 50th anniversary of our town, but they're also having their anniversary gala. And again, it's a gala or gala. And that's taking place on May the 16th at the brand new terminal building at the Sullivan County International Airport over in Swan Lake. Now, this is a one-of-a-kind evening, and they'll celebrate 50 years, as I said, of advancing the arts in Sullivan County, featuring performances from local artists. Locally sourced season menu will be there, prepared by Chef Oscar Vargas of the Flavor Cult. Curated auction of unique experiences, special guest appearances, and of course the premiere of a newly commissioned documentary featurette on DVAA's history and impact. So a lot will be in that evening of fun. And again, for more information, the website will be DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Now coming up next week on Curtain Call, I will be joined by Brad Krumholtz and Lindsay Anderson of the North American Cultural Laboratory, better known to most of us here as NACL. And we're going to be taking a close look at the success of their 2025 season, but also, of course, we're going to preview what's ahead for the 2026 season, including a couple of upcoming performances, like an evening with Kenneth Kang on Saturday, May 9th at 7:30 p.m., and the return of Carol Performance Group Saturday, May 30th, also at 7:30 p.m., both taking place at NACL in Highland Lake, New York. And you can go to their website as well to get more information on that. And by the way, if you're interested in being a guest on Curtain Call, if you have a show, a production, if you're an actor, director, choreographer, producer, stagehand, whatever it may be, if you're involved in theater and you want to come on the show to talk about it, in depth, a good conversation, please reach out to me at tom@wjffradio.org. Send me a little email. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of that reverb. No, that don't work, Tom. Take it out. So that's going to be it for me tonight. I want to thank you all so much for joining me. I really do appreciate you spending this time with me, and I very much look forward to continuing to share the voices, the stories, and the creative spirit of theater with you in the weeks to come. Until that time, I'll say goodnight. I'm Tom Candela, and this has been Curtain Call. Good night, folks.
Jazz returns to the Cooperage Project in Honesdale with Ryan Keberle and Catharsis, Saturday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. Trombonist Ryan Keberle, guitarist-vocalist Camilla Mezza, and bassist Jorge Roeder bring a modern form of indie jazz, blending traditional jazz with elements of chamber music, South American folk, and indie rock. All ages welcome. Children under 10 attend free. 21 and over, BYOB. Tickets at thecooperageproject.org. Paid for by the Cooperage Project.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, our producer Tasha Sandoval takes us back to Colombia, what it's like to leave the United States and go back to the motherland.
I think I want to prove something to myself. Is Colombia still home? And if it's not, can I make it home again?
That's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill Local news, culture, and NPR.